the really foresighted ones, public information officers, people who were and always have been exploring new ways of communication for responding to emergencies and crises, they started testing out these networks when they first came online, in 2005, 2006, 2007. And as more people have come onto them, it's created an expectation that the people who are in a position to help are listening. And now digital cries for help come over different platforms than they used to. There's always been ham radio, and there will continue to be, I think. But what we're seeing is that people are posting to their social media accounts that they need help. And the Red Cross research, actually, that they created and before this summit last year showed that they expect that someone is listening, and a majority of them expect help within an hour. There really has been this dynamic set up between the Red Cross and FEMA and local emergency responders that if you talk on these public networks about there being a crisis, someone will pick up on it.
And as I was reading your piece, that seems to be one of the bigger challenges. Is if you're going to go there, you have to really go there. There's no wading into the pool. You have to jump into the deep end.
Well, it's hard not to go in all if you're and be all in. Wendy Harmon, who is the social media director for the Red Cross, we've set up an expectation that because we're present in these spaces, we're listening. So by having accounts, it basically means that someone on the other end thinks that they can say something to it and someone will be there. It's harder in the sense that there's no busy signal, right, in the same way that you'd expect, but it's also potentially much more powerful because of that. When someone needs help, their voice can be amplified instantly all the way around the world. And sometimes that quickly gets to, a person who is in a position to help, whether it's someone in the military, in the media, in an emergency responding unit, public information officers for five departments out in Los Angeles and elsewhere are listening, confirming, verifying, asking people what they're seeing, and then bringing that into the operational workflow of the people on the ground that are responding. And that's a very important, a reciprocal relationship that they're now building with the public over these networks over time. It's a new way of delivering better situational awareness to the people on the ground.
And one of the other parts of this that is just seems to grow each and every day, month, year, is involving geospatial, involving maps, essentially being able to tag where things are going on.
The mapping component of this is really exciting. And some of the technologies that are coming online now that allow crisis managers to pull in social data in a structured way and then overlay it onto maps is changing the way that disaster response works fundamentally. People have heard of crisis mapping after Haiti, where you had people creating open street maps there on the ground and then having first responders load them onto their GPSs. There's now the capacity to structure, updates on social media onto a map and then look at the frequency of specific kinds of updates and understand more about how fires or floods or other kinds of incidents are concentrated. And that's very important to people on the other side of these accounts, these first responders who are trying to understand not just what's happening, but what the relevance is and what the data is telling them in terms of how they need to move assets around. And since those decisions are meaningful in that moment, using, say, geospatial platforms like the one that the Australian police deployed in the Queensland floods is really helpful for them, particularly because if you don't have assets on the ground there, if you're a responder, you can get some kind of sense of what's happening where before you get there. And most people in that position, if it's actionable intelligence, want that. So there's a really interesting dynamic growing between the unstructured data that people are creating using their mobile devices and what the first responders can pull into their own applications and work with.
My definition of this stuff is sort of all of us are smarter than each of us individually. In the emergency response area, that particularly can be true, where you can share that data, and if you can make sense of it in a real way, wow, that's pretty powerful stuff. And you mentioned this one site, there's companies that are forming around this to help folks do that. How do you say it? Loki-me?
Right. That's an interesting app. It's actually the next generation of where this is evolving towards. It's loqi.me. That's the whole domain name for it. It's an application that was developed by Amber Case and her another really talented developer. She was the UX person out in Portland, there was an app competition there to try to use that city's data. And one of the things that they built was this real-time beacon service that can be laid onto a city's grid, and somebody can use tools and their a location-enabled device or Wi-Fi to triangulate where somebody is. And it's an open-source platform. So the question with these things is, it's useful in PDX. We'll see if it spreads elsewhere. That company in particular is a little startup out of Portland. It drives it, and they've got now people using the API, application program interface for it, up in Seattle to let people be able to understand what's happening nearby them using city data. I think that's herenear.org. You can get the app for your phone. So we're the new way that these services and data can get mashed up and give people more information about their physical world as they move around it is really growing in fascinating ways.
The innovation just continues, particularly in this emergency management area.
The question, I think, around innovation is always tricky with government. I feel like it's becoming a little bit of a buzzword in Washington, but the reality of it isn't. I mean, if you can see the connections that some of the people who are trying to think ahead to what they're going to need, it becomes really interesting. And the sense of the remarkable thing for a citizen isn't necessarily that we put a dozen satellites in the sky, although that's an extraordinary thing. I mean, all the technology that goes into launching satellites and having them stay up there. It's in being able to get to work or get to an appointment or get to the hospital using a GPS device, or being able to get information on a given phone or other platform. It's in a delivery system working differently. That's where a platform and making different data decisions really results in something interesting. And I think we're increasingly seeing that in transit and in health data. It'll be really interesting to see as more geospatial data opens up and as people become living sensors. They're sharing information about the world they're in. And doing so in a public structured way, how that can be leveraged to optimize different parts of life. I mean, you can think of all the different ways that people move around urban cityscapes. If you can start to create more understanding of that, we'll get into some really interesting opportunities and also some scary places too. I mean, I'm sure you caught the story about how China is going to track people's movements through cell phones.
Yeah,
well, I mean,
right.
That's what we're talking about here. This sort of electronic mapping and data can be used to make city residents' lives better, and on all under different conditions, could create the so-called digital panopticon that Evgeny Morozov has talked about.